Chapter 11. "Are we being bad?" Tisis asked.
"We're being naughty. There's a difference," Kip said.
The morning sun angled in through poorly sealed cracks in the walls of the captain's cabin, emphasizing how little privacy they had.
"Are you ready?"
"I better be," she said. "She'll be along any minute now. Take off your tunic."
They'd been up half the night, talking. But plotting was one thing, carrying it out was another.
"Oh, I just had another idea," Tisis said, keeping her voice low.
She sat up in the narrow bed and swung her slender legs over the side. She'd put her lingerie on again after their little disaster last night, adding a light robe to her camisole and underwear.
"Tunic, Kip,"
she said, throwing off her robe and tossing it into a corner. He'd seen her in beautiful underthings several times now, and she'd been nude during his very first interaction with her at his threshing, but Kip wasn't even close to being accustomed to seeing Tisis's body. Before he'd known her, he'd actually kind of hated her for being so flawless. He'd thought at the time that she'd tried to kill him, and she had made him fail the threshing. But still, hating someone for being beautiful was kind of perverse, wasn't it? And he was really the last person who should hate anyone for what she'd inherited. Kip had somehow gone from the whore's boy to the polychrome husband of the richest heiress in the seven satrapies, all because of his father. Of course, that he'd been a hypocrite to hate her didn't make it easier. It wouldn't be so bad if she were just beautiful. Even just among the squad, the young men had different preferences. Kruxa was a sucker for a pretty face and dark, kinky hair like Lucia had had. Farikudi waxed poetic about a bottom that could shake your house like an earthquake. Big Leo had wanted a petite girl, and when Tio had made fun of the obvious size differential that would create, Leo had said,
"Yeah, petite, like you, Tia, but you know, with breasts."
Later in training, she'd accidentally kicked Leo in the stones. Twice. The problem with Tisis was that she was exactly the type of beautiful Kip liked most. Skin light and exotic to a boy from the hinterlands of Tyria, the vanishingly rare true blonde hair, a huge smile, radiant hazel eyes, a heart-shaped face, and that body. Those breasts. Kip tried not to think about those. Which wasn't easy, with them straining the silk of her camisole with its tiny straps and its deep cut into her cleavage. Kip loved Tia. But Tisis, holy shit. Woman, you are the reason some ugly, smart guy invented language, simply so he could have some chance against better-looking men to woo you. In typical Kipley fashion, though, he'd realized he loved Tia and then married Tisis not half an hour later. "With my body I thee worship," part of their archaic wedding oath went. Well, that part was going to be easy. She stepped close enough that she pressed that worshipped body against him.
"This'll put the cream in the copy," she said.
Kip was familiar with the bitter drink, and at first he thought it was sexual innuendo. He was about to say something about her skin being lighter than his, so what they were actually trying to do was put copy in cream, unless by cream she meant his. Then he realized she meant this will be the finishing touch, not an innuendo. Right. Excuse me for going there.
"Tear my camisole," she said.
"No?"
She grabbed his hand.
"Like we were so passionate you ripped it open last night."
Her eyes sparkled as she put his hands on her chest, clearly loving the game. The second night they actually tried to make love, Kip had nervously deferred to Tisis to lead things. She'd said she was only technically a virgin, so Kip figured even that made her way more experienced than he was. She'd gone quickly from tearing off clothes to attempting penetration, and after that hadn't happened and she'd been left fuming and trying to blame him, it had seemed like too much to ask to say, "Hey, do you mind if I just play with your body a bit? I like it." On the fourth night of their marriage, with the addition of olive oil and a singular focus on breaching the Jade Gate, lest their marriage be annulled and they start a war that no one could win and that would kill tens of thousands of innocents and be remembered ignominiously for all time, Kip hadn't got a chance for his playfully wandering hands to wander much at all, playfully or any other way.
"Kip?"
"Hmm?"
The camisole? Mm-hmm, he said, lost in the gloriousness under his hands.
Oh!
He cleared his throat and tugged gently on the deep neckline of her camisole, trying to ignore that a camisole of this material, with this much lace and dyed this colour, might cost more than all the villages in Recton would have seen in a year. Inside, Kip was still the poor boy, and he wondered if he always would be.
Oh, for our Hollands!
She grabbed his hands in hers and helped him tear the neckline down to her navel, but then she held his hands there. They both hesitated. She did some kind of undulating feline movement into him that did all sorts of wonderful things.
I never did take care of you, did I?
She asked. It wouldn't take long, I promise, Kip said. She looked at the door and grimaced.
Verity'll be here any...
Kip slipped his hand from silk to silken skin, and she stopped speaking. She looked up at him with suddenly fiery eyes, as if she were furious. She threw a leg up on his hip and grabbed his face in both hands.
Why, Kip, why? Why do I want to be naughty with you when I can't? But when it's perfectly acceptable and I have all night, then I can't. Damn it!
She ground her hips against him angrily, kissed him, and bit his bottom lip. Then she pushed away from him. Never breaking eye contact, she shimmied out of her underthings and peeled off her camisole, throwing each to a separate corner of the room. She tousled her long blonde hair. She scooted into the narrow bed and pulled the covers only over her legs, as if she were totally comfortable being nude in front of her husband. Which, of course, was what Verity needed to believe.
Ah, idea, Tysis said. Love bites. We'll have to do that tomorrow. Tunic, Kip, off! Then get over here and give me some whisker burn on my neck, quickly.
Kip's mother had once said that if he pulled a funny face for too long, it would get stuck. Could the same happen if your horn was up for too long? What if it got stuck? Or Hollum, let it not be so. The blackguard blacks that the mighty had been allowed to take were a nice camouflaging black. But they were also tight. There was a knock at the door. And Kip realized suddenly that somehow the plan had always been that he answered the door naked. And then he had to pretend to be comfortable with that, like he was the kind of man who would answer the door naked, because, wow, after a night like last night, who could think about clothes? That hadn't been his addition to the plan, he was sure of it. Even if Kip was slow-cooked in a stew of sexual satiety until he fell to pieces, he didn't think he'd ever not want to cover himself.
My lady, my lord, a breakfast? Verity said from outside. My lord husband, would you get the door, please, and then come right back to bed? It's so cold without you,
Tysis said loudly. She grinned at him. Kip shucked off his tunic, acutely aware of Tysis's eyes on him. Part of him knew that his modesty was ridiculous at this point. Though he'd kept his tunic on during their abortive attempts at intercourse, she knew how he looked by now. Still, it was one thing to know he was fat, another to see it. He held his tunic in front of him in one hand casually, covering as much of belly and groin as possible, and popped the door open. Even with that, beyond Verity, he saw a sailor trying to get a glimpse beyond Kip at the nymph they all knew lay within. Kip just gave the man a self-satisfied smile and closed the door after Verity came in, balancing a silver tray in one hand and a steaming bucket of water in her other. Verity was a gnarled oak stump of a woman, wider than she was short, with silver hair that had once been blonde, holding far stronger ideas of how lords and ladies should behave than any lord or lady Kip had ever met.
Oh, is it time for breakfast already?
Tysis said. She yawned and stretched luxuriously, uncovered. Kip forgot about the plan. He dropped his tunic from nerveless fingers. He snatched it off the floor, almost colliding with a slave through his sudden lurch in the tiny cabin.
"Perhaps milady would prefer to bathe and dress first?" Verity asked.
Kip tried to slip around behind her just as she bent over suddenly to put down the bucket. His groin brushed against a bottom so large and wide that Farcudi would faint. Mercifully, his fist and the wadded tunic ran interference in the split second before Kip could twist, taking the contact on his hip rather than his horn. He made it past her, but his motion jostled her as she set down the bucket, slopping water on the floor. Verity stood, slowly leaving the bucket on the floor. With the air of one extremely put out, she sighed, looking at the mess. Then she glared judgment at Kip, naked as he was. Kip swallowed. "Does my lord need something?" Verity asked. Kip had picked up on the very subtle cues that Verity didn't approve of Tysis's marrying without her sister Irene's consent. She had extended that disapproval to Kip himself. "Sorry," Kip said. She sniffed and turned to Tysis, muttering none too quietly, "A proper lord would know not to apologize to slaves." She raised and brightened her voice. "Milady, only a sponge bath?" Tysis asked, disappointed. "I fought the captain long and hard, milady. He avers fresh water is too precious on a voyage to be used for bathing." Verity took a folding screen and set it up to block Tysis from view, though the logic of that escaped Kip. Verity spoke aloud, too, as if the screen were a real barrier. "I see that your lord husband has mussed your braids. I suppose we shall have to set aside a few hours to fix them this morning. I think you should also speak to him about procuring a room slave." "What?" Kip interrupted. "Why would I need a room slave? We have you." "I'm not that kind of room slave, my lord. You'll need to get your own for that." Tysis started laughing immediately, but Kip didn't understand. "My lord doesn't need that kind of room slave, Verity," Tysis said. "I'm keeping him quite contented. Many a lord tells his wife that while seeking additional pleasures on the side. But a lord who strays must have the decency to do so safely, so as not to bring disease and dishonor to his house." "Verity," Tysis said, "I'll not have you speak so." Kip caught up only slowly. First, he wanted to laugh incredulously. Verity was worried he wanted to take her to bed. And then all the rest crystallized as dirty whispers, not quite directed at him, but definitely directed at him. He had long felt like a bumpkin, lost in the tightly circumscribed manners of the nobility, and the customs of slaveholding were the most opaque to him, and made him more reticent than anything else. It was baffling to him that when he made mistakes, if anything erred on the side of being too nice, giving a gratuity or looking a slave in the eye or apologizing, slaves resented those slips most. It was as if they were saying, "Don't break the rules, they're all we have." They knew how to deal with abuse, or with being ignored or taken for granted, but making them remember all the privileges of freedom was too hard. Verity said. "You're a woman married now, mistress, and it's time you face facts. Your duty in the bedchamber is to provide my lord with children. It is his to satisfy your carnal desires fully. But you have no reciprocal duties on that count. If he desires activities you don't enjoy, or even ones you do more frequently than you wish to indulge him, he has a room slave for that. Of course, as the lady running the household, it is your duty to procure a room slave pleasing to your lord husband." "Or Hollum have mercy," Tysis said. "It is his mercy," Verity said. "What else are slaves for but to ease the burdens on my lady?" The old Kip would have shrunk back, would have accepted the slave's sly insinuations. Kip swept the folding screen crashing aside. Verity was dunking a cube of soap into her bucket. Kip hauled her up and pinned her against the wall, his fire-scarred left hand around her throat. "You listen to me," Kip growled. "I keep my oaths, all of them, including my wedding oaths. And if you impugn my honour again, I swear to Orholm, I'll throw you overboard for the sharks." "My lord, I wasn't." "We both know you were." She'd gone limp. Just another slave being abused by another master. "Look at me! Look at me!" he shouted. She looked at him with the cold impassivity of a woman who didn't value her life much, or perhaps the cold terror of a woman who thought she was going to die. "You can hate me, but you will not pour poison in my wife's ears about me. Not while I'm here, not while I'm gone. Do I make myself understood?"
"Perfectly, my lord."
He released her. "If you can't stand to serve us loyally, we'll sell you immediately. I'll even let you choose which offer for you we accept. I won't send you somewhere terrible as a punishment, but I also won't have you here."
"Yes, my lord," she said quietly.
"Now take the laundry and get out. I'll have your answer by tonight." She moved around the cabin more nimbly than Kip would have imagined possible, gathering Tysis's cast-off clothing and noticing, but making no comment on the tears. She mopped up the spilled water, and Kip realized then that he was still naked. Tisis was staring at him, but there was no teasing now. She was holding a cloth up in front of herself, and she looked a little scared. Oh, hells. Did I just jump the wrong way?
My lord, Verity asked, do you wish me to launder your tunic as well?
He was holding it in his hand, still. Yes?
Yes,
he said. It did actually need laundering. He'd been training on deck daily with a squad, and though he washed himself daily, he hadn't gotten around to cleaning his clothing. At the Chromeria, you put your dirty clothes in the basket, and they magically appeared the next day clean and folded on your bed. But he didn't hand over the tunic. Verity handed him a towel.
For your sponge bath, milord, she said.
It was big enough that he could hold it in front of himself while he handed her the tunic. She walked to the door with her pile of laundry.
Oh, my lord, just in case my lady is too delicate to speak of such things, and since you'll be washing yourself, do make sure to clean well under your foreskin. A lady's perfumed garden ought to be fragrant, but a gentleman's oak should smell only of soap.
Kip was so aghast that he couldn't say anything. Tisis snorted. Kip just shook his head, acknowledging that she'd scored a point. Her mouth pressed to a line briefly to avoid smiling. Verity walked out the door.
I'll return in due time to dress, milady, and take the dishes. My lord? My lady?
It was only as she closed the door behind herself that Kip realized the parting tease had been a test, too. Was Kip the kind of master who would hurt her at any provocation, or had her adultery insinuation crossed one of a relatively small number of important lines? It was the kind of thing a slave would want to know. He sat down on the bed, not knowing whether he'd passed or failed, or what either meant about him. Tisis had pulled the screen back into place, and she was continuing her sponge bath.
You scared me, but it was a good distraction.
Huh? Kip asked, coming out of his reverie.
Distracting her like that so I could wash myself. She told me yesterday I didn't smell like sex.
As if I'm that smart. Kip only realized he'd said it aloud afterward, but Tisis said nothing from behind her screen. Kip pulled on his underclothes and his clean blacks. When Tisis emerged, dressed in her moss-green tunic and breeches with a leather belt that emphasized her slender waist, she had an odd look in her eye.
So you knocked down the screen because you were actually angry?
Yes, Kip said. Was this a trick question? Am I a bully?
You're a lord,
Tisis said, as if it were a strange question.
The gentry know your titles, but they also know what you were before you came to Chromeria. We'll devour you if you let us, Kip, even our slaves. That's what we do when we're threatened.
Is it always to be battles and contests, even with my own side? Kip asked.
Only if you lose the important ones, she said.
She saw he didn't understand.
Kip, in Lucidonius's time, Caris Shadowblinder was a theatre girl. It was considered the next thing to a prostitute by polite society. No one talks about her as a theatre girl now. She became a name. There is no middle path for people like you and her. You're suddenly elevated greatly, and everyone wants to know if you deserve it. Me, I can be some lady born to a great family with one or two excellences, but little else worthy of comment. That path is closed to you. You come in suddenly at the top, and everyone else feels like they've been knocked down a notch. You have to prove yourself.
Even to slaves.
Slaves take not only orders, but also cues from their masters. Verity was Irene's governess. Irene sending her to serve me? You think that wasn't a little dig? My sister was implying that I was acting like a child, but it's also because she trusts Verity.
If I'd known that, maybe I wouldn't have threatened her with death, Kip said, grimacing.
About that. Were you angry because it was true or because you wanted her to think it was?
Something about her intensity drove all thoughts out of Kip's mind.
Because what was true? Kip asked. That you keep your oaths.
So of course Kip thought immediately of the oaths he hadn't kept. One to his mother, to avenge her rape by his father, a story that had all been nonsense from an addict. And then he'd sworn to Gavin that he would destroy Clytos Blue. He'd been doing his best to investigate the colour through the forbidden libraries, but he'd never found anything damning there and had broken that oath too. He said, Maybe I was so furious because I've failed oaths before. And he told her about them, without too many specifics. She was still a Malagos, after all.
But you consider your wedding oaths binding, and plan to do all in your strength to keep them? She asked.
Yes, absolutely, he said.
But you love her.
Her. Tia. It was a gut punch. So Tisis wasn't oblivious. Kip hadn't said a word about Tia. Tisis had picked that up from what? A few glances. Do I lie? After a pause this long, a lie would be pointless, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think so.
I don't know. I've been infatuated with like 4 girls in the last 2 years, always the impossible ones. Maybe that's why you're terrifying. You aren't just not impossible, you're not just possible. You're actual, and the rejection will hurt that much more when it comes, won't it?
He'd meant to use the technique his grandfather had taught him, use his blunderbuss of a mouth to his own advantage and see how the other person reacted to whatever outrageous truth he'd fired at them. Except that Tisis didn't respond at all, she merely looked at him. Well, now Kit felt naked in a new way that was nearly as uncomfortable as the first. Then she said,
"When you wouldn't take off your tunic, were you hiding your scars or your stomach?"
"You can say fat," he said.
"I will not."
She said no more, and he couldn't help but be impressed by her quiet dignity.
"Did they teach that in lady school?"
He didn't mean to say it out loud, but she didn't respond.
Again.
"Sorry," he said.
"How did you get those?"
she asked, as if he were being a willful child, which was sort of fair.
"Too much pie."
"The scars," she said, missing his attempt at humor, though he couldn't tell whether it was on purpose or not.
"I lost a bet," he said.
He was taking the totally wrong tack here, sailing straight into the storm instead of quartering the waves.
"With some kind of animal?" she said angrily.
"Kip, there was a part of our vows that said, let there be no darkness between us. Why are you lying to me about stupid stuff?"
It was supposed to be the setup for a joke.
"A bet? I bet dinner that I could get out of a locked closet. The rats bet I couldn't. I was dinner."
No one had ever really laughed at that joke, but he thought that was maybe in the delivery. Right as he was about to explain and apologize, she said,
"About those vows, if she showed up and she became possible, and I would never know."
"I'm not adding cheetah to the list," Kip said.
"The list?"
Damn, caught out. And no joke was possible now, not after the ass he'd already been.
"The list of things I dislike about myself."
"Loathe."
"That decides it," she said.
"Decides what?" Kip asked.
"Vini is going to be so furious,"
Tisis said. She squared her shoulders and straightened her back.
"Rini?"
"Oh, her sister Irene.
But if you can't run away with your husband, who can you run away with?"
"What?"
"What?"
"I'm not going home, Kip. I'm going with you. Wherever you go, I'm going."
"I really don't."
"Save your breath. There's nothing you can say that will change my mind. Try to stop me and our deal's off."
Empty threat? After all that talk of failing family.
"How about this one, then?"
She stepped close and grabbed his crotch through his clothes.
"This stays with me. If you choose to leave my presence, you'll go without it."
"Oh, come on, it just finally went to sleep.
You find threats of me tearing it off arousing?"
"Not when you put it like that."
"So it's settled. I'm going," she said triumphantly.
He pushed her back.
"Tisis, this isn't a game. We're going to war. You're no fighter, and you're no noble," she said. "But we'll teach each other."
"Tisis, it's different. Nobles won't kill you."
"If you believe that, you're a fool."
Well, shit. Kip's very pause was an admission of defeat.
Tisis said, "You don't know it yet, but you need me as much as I need you."
She smiled coyly, but at least she didn't rub in the victory.
"The squad's not going to like it," Kip said. She pointed at him.
"Ha ha! I beat a guile."
He hoped his face was a study in nonplussed Kip. But she only smiled beatifically for a moment, thawing him more than he would admit. Then her mouth pursed in quick disapproval.
"Also, did you really put clean clothes on your dirty body?"
"Yes."
She clucked in mock horror.
"My lord husband, surely you must know a lady's perfumed garden ought to be fragrant, but a lord's—"
"Now, fine.
I'll wash.